Hey guys, it's springtime in Canada, and we at Classic Camera Revival are still going at it. And this is April 2016, and we are all shooting one camera today.
Coming to you live from Toronto, Canada, this is the Classic Camera Revival. If you don't have gear acquisition syndrome now, you certainly will after listening to our show.
Okay, guys, we're back, and we are still on a bit of a Nikon kick. We had two Nikons last month, and this month we have probably one of the rarest Nikon cameras ever produced because it was produced for such a short time, but actually is historically a very important camera in the Nikon line because it was the first one to introduce their very famous and very accurate matrix metering system, and that's the Nikon FA, which is actually John Meadows' camera. So we all took it out for a photo walk and each shot about 9 frames of film through this thing to all do a bit of a discussion about that. So we are going to pass it off first to Donna to hear her thoughts on the FA.
So this camera is incredibly unique. Its design is different. Looking at it, you would think that the camera is really big, really heavy, bulky. And as soon as you pick it up, put it in your hand, it's actually really not. It is incredibly comfortable. It is far from heavy. It is just, even wearing a glove, when I took it out, it was chilly outside. And even just in the glove, it felt very comfortable to hold, which you don't find that with every camera. It's a nice looking camera. Very easy to load, very easy to use. It looks really nice. It's a really nice looking camera.
Anything you didn't like about it?
No, actually. No, nothing at all. I can't.
Like it seemed like, you know, 30 seconds after you're holding it, you were busy shooting away, and it felt very natural.
Fun camera. Very fun camera. As soon as my 9 frames was up, I was like, wow, already? I didn't want to give it to anyone. I really, really liked it. It's a really fun camera. I really like it.
That's the same thing I noticed, is that she just got the camera in her hand, and that was it. Gone. She vanished. I mean, I've seen her pick up her Olympus, and she shoots a couple frames, comes over to me, blah, 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 blah. Next thing I know, she goes off again and shoots a few more frames. But this one, it was as if she just was like, I've got 9 frames. I want to concentrate. I want to get it done. And the look on her face when she was handing it off, she looked almost as if she was saying, you know what? I really don't want to give this camera away. I want to hold on to it a little bit more.
And nice.
So no, that was good to see. So yeah, no, it's fantastic.
Yeah, no, it is. It really is a nice camera. And it also looks like if you had, this one doesn't have a neck strap or anything, but if you definitely had a neck strap, it wouldn't be very heavy at all.
No.
It's, as I said, it looks deceiving. It looks like it would be heavy, but it's fun. Really nice camera.
Yeah. Mike.
I'm not going to lie to you. I shoot a lot of Canon, but this one can grow on me pretty quick. I mean, it I didn't even notice when I was holding it. It felt so natural in my hand. The viewfinder was like big, it was bright, it's beautiful. And I mean, I was almost upset the minute I hit my last frame. I mean, I was the last person to shoot this, but it just felt so bloody simple to use.
Actually, that's another thing though, with the viewfinder, people with glasses, it's a really big thing for me with glasses. It's very hard to see the focusing wearing your glasses, and this one is actually incredibly easy to see.
Nice. Yeah.
Well, when I was using it, I found the viewfinder was fantastic. I mean, it was, you look through it, you saw exactly what you wanted to see. You got the meter was right there. You look at the top, you've got your f-stop that you're on, and you half press the shutter button and boink, there it is in the LCD screen. It's your shutter speed that you're shooting at. The viewfinder blind is great. I think that's a really, really useful option. I mean,
especially if you're doing astrophotography.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
And long exposure, being able to shut that is beautiful.
Yeah, this camera's like hands down, it's really nice. I mean, I'm holding it right now again after we did our little walk, and I mean, it just feels good in the hand. I could honestly, if I was really interested in getting another SLR, I'd happily pick one of these up. But as Alex has said, I need another SLR, like I need another hole in the head. So no, I'm I'm happy to give it a whirl, see what it's like. But at the end of the day, I am happy to pass it back to its owner. So
nice. So I am a big Nikon shooter. Most of my 35mm SLRs are Nikon. I like this camera. I really, really do. I'll just echo everything that Donna and Mike has said. It fits easily in the hand. It's easy to hold. It's easy to use. Big bright viewfinder. I have a Nikon FG sitting around, which has its flaws, and this fixes them. Mm-hmm. I mean, the FG, don't know where the FG sits. Did it come before or after?
I'd have to look. It was more like a more almost consumer grade.
Okay.
One of their earlier electric ones. Like I had one too and it died.
Yeah. And this is a very familiar camera for me to use because it has the pull it out like the FM2 to activate it, turn on the meter and unlock the shutter release. I definitely think I will have to take a look, see if I can find just a body. I don't need the lenses. I have plenty of lenses. And that's another nice thing about it being Nikon is that I can use all my AIS and D-type autofocus lenses on this camera and it'll work perfectly. So if my FM2 happens to die or ends up being given away to somebody, the FA will definitely be the replacement.
Cool.
Actually, the funny thing is, even though it's easy to hold, I don't like this little extra hand grip on the side. It throws me off a bit. I'm used to the flush mm-hmm. nature of the of it, but this could be removed, right? Just comes off. It's just a cosmetic piece.
That I'm not sure. I've never tried.
Okay. But anyways, yeah, no. Definitely, if you're looking for something, if you like the capability of going full automatic, this I would definitely rate as a definite one you'd have to look for. But again, they are rare. So they probably carry a decent price tag. But if you can find one, jump on it. Mm-hmm. Hands down.
For sure.
And finally, for the last review, the owner of the camera, Mr. John Meadows.
So what I think I'm going to do is I'm going to focus on a couple of more specific things. Mm-hmm. Some positives, not some that are sort of irritations or things to be aware of. A positive one, there's some neat little features in this camera. Like for example, when, because it's an automatic, you know, let's say if you're loading a roll of film, you know, if you put the film in, you want to go click wind for three shots. On some, let's say if you leave the lens cap on some cameras, it's automatic. Oh, you want me to do a 3-second exposure?
Yeah.
That's a pain in the ass, especially mm-hmm. trying to load quickly. But with this camera, I think it's a similar feature like on the F3 is when you load the film, as you're winding up to number one in the film counter, mm-hmm. it just says, okay, these are nothing shots.
So we'll 80th just, of a second.
Or 80th or 250th. Oh, cool. So you can just go yeah. click, click, click. And then as soon as it goes, gets to the first frame, away to go. Now, if you're not aware of that feature, then you might be saying, okay, how come the meter must be broken?
Yeah.
Yep.
So how come it's only saying mechanical? But if you know the feature is there, I think that's a nice little touch.
Oh, absolutely.
Now, a couple of things that I don't care for. Maybe it's just I need new glasses. I find setting the film speed on this very difficult. Yes. There is a red dot somewhere that you line up.
I see it.
And yep. maybe it's sort of worn. Oh, I have to use a magnifying glass to be sure. Okay. So yep. I find the exposure compensation is stiff and a bit awkward. And so let's say if you're shooting snow in the winter, mm-hmm. You know, an automatic, you need to want to open up two stops. Yep. So I found this a bit of a pain to use. Like it's not a fatal flaw, but I wish that they come up with something a bit more elegant, a bit more smoothly operated. I was also that this is a commonly how it was done yeah. When this camera came out. So it's unfair to compare it by today's yeah. standards. I just find this a bit of a trick.
I'd rather, actually, in my personal taste, I'd rather have it a little more awkward to adjust the EV compensation than have it really easy, because that's one of the biggest flaws I find in my Contax G2 is how easy it is to adjust the EV compensation. And all of a sudden, I've shot an entire roll where I've compensated two stops and didn't realize it. And it went crap.
So there's definitely two sides to that. It'd be nice to find that medium. The last thing I'll talk about, and like this isn't a negative, this is just a fact of life, is unlike some cameras, like the, I've just taken the lens off this little lever here. There's a little lever that on some other models, like the F3, the FE, even up to the F4, this can be switched and moved out of the way so that you can use non-AI glass.
Okay.
Yep. So for you, those of you that can't see, it's actually on the body of the camera. When he took off the lens, it's sitting right on the top.
Yeah. And so like that's why one thing I like about my Nikon F4 is I have a few lenses that are like pre-AI. Like I've got a 50 1.4, an 85 1.8, which is a great portrait lens, and the classic 105, and I can use them on my F2. You know, that sort of makes sense. The FE, well, until it died, and even the Nikon F4, although I have to do it in stop down mode, but I can only use the newer lenses on this camera. If you try and mount a non AI lens on this, you will have an unpleasant experience.
For those that aren't sure what AI and non-AI stands for, it just means auto-indexing for the aperture.
Yeah. And I know when Nikon introduced the AI lenses back in the, I think, late 70s, I think, mid late to late 70s,
yeah,
they had a service where you could send in your old non-AI lenses, and they would just mill out the back ring, yeah, so that it would work. But the thing is, it's been decades since Nikon offered that service.
But there are still people out there who will do that for you.
And be careful, because it's one of those repairs that looks deceptive, or modifications that looks deceptively easy. So there are people out there who will butcher a lens.
Yeah. Or you'll butcher it yourself.
Yeah. I would not try this myself.
And Nikon glass, even used, is not the cheapest out there, mostly because you can still use the old manual focus lenses on modern digital bodies.
To wrap up, so apart from those little irritants, it's a camera that, frankly, I haven't used it in a while. That's why I have too many cameras, and sometimes it needed some love. So I got it out, and I shot a test roll last weekend to make sure that it would work for our show this time. And it really is a joy to use. Don, you mentioned that it's glove friendly.
It is, yes.
This works quite well with the glove. Apart from the things I mentioned, there's not really much to complain about this camera. Good viewfinder. Like, again, I wear glasses, but it's not quite like a F3 HP or something.
No.
But it's still quite usable, has a nice, solid, reliable feel.
It's a nice looking camera as well.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when to compare it to an F3, I mean, let's compare apples to apples. I mean, the F3, we're looking at a journalist camera, and this one looks more like an advanced amateur. And I mean, in all honesty, I can compare it to, say, let's say, Canon AE-1 program.
Yep. That's exactly what it is, or a Minolta X700.
Yep. To be perfectly honest, I mean, coming from me, I think I'd go for the FA. Just simply put, it's more comfortable in the hand. Mm-hmm. It's got a slightly bigger viewfinder. But for those of you that have ever used the Canon A-series line of cameras, especially like the AE-1, AE-1 program, for the meter, this one is a lot simpler to use if you're wanting to just do meter readings as opposed to auto.
And we should say that the AE-1 was famous for, like, the first AE-1 was the shutter priority, yeah, automatic. This has, you can go aperture priority, shutter priority with the appropriate lenses, manual, or even full program mode. So you can, it basically covers all the bases. Yep. Nice, fast shutter speed up to 1/4000th of a second. I've never used a shutter speed of 1/4000th of a second. I don't do sports or try to capture bullets, yeah, but it's nice to have it if I'm ever shooting, you know, Delta 3200 at noon at the beach or something.
Mm-hmm.
Hard to go wrong with this camera.
No, absolutely.
So this month we actually had a chance to sit down with David Nardi, who is back in business doing E6 processing here in Southern Ontario in Toronto. John Meadows had a chance to sit down and chat with him about life, photography, and what really his goals are in regards to bringing back E6 to Toronto, which has been sadly lacking. So let's give a listen to that.
So, David, with fewer and fewer slide processing options available in Toronto, the fact that you have now reintroduced your E6 processing service has made you an extremely popular guy here. What has made you decide to relaunch your E6 development service?
Well, I had the help of Downtown Camera. The first time I did it, I was doing it on my own, and to flash backwards about 7-8 years, I had the machinery for about that length of time, and I decided to do it myself. And this was back in the day when the labs were still prominent and developing E6 and film was popular and the whole bit, but I had enough faux pas at the labs that I decided, okay, I'm going to learn how to do this myself because I am a control freak. And that's what caused me to invest in a machine and figure it out. So years later, as I noticed things dwindling and the labs were shutting down, and it came to a point where I think Toronto Cameras, what was it called now? Toronto Image Works, yes. Once they shut their line down, I was like, okay, that's it. I better get started. So doing it purely out of passion, I thought I'd bring it back, and I advertised to a small window of people that I had, and it slowly grew from there. And then it got to a point where it did get overwhelming in August 2014. The last run I did was about 275 roles, and I decided, okay, I can't continue. And there were many reasons for that, but the biggest one being I work in the movie business, so very much related to what I've already do as a photographer. I work as a professional camera assistant for the union, our local here, 667. And so I'm surrounded by cameras day in, day out. So, you know, digital film, I'm pretty familiar with all of it. And the workload there, you know, 12, 14 hour days, it was just becoming too much. And then for weekends to sit there at the machine processing, you know, essentially a never ending flow of film, I said, okay, I can't do this anymore. So regretfully, I shut down. And then it was about 6 months later, I think. These are all very rough guidelines. Mm-hmm. Where Downtown Camera reached out. It first arrived in an email. Her name was Claudia Mack, M-A-C. And she heard of my reputation, you know, big, long email asking what I'm doing now, how come I had to shut down and the whole bit. So I explained everything. And again, this was actually months later because I didn't get to her email right away because I was busy working and doing everything else. And then finally, when I realized I had forgotten to reply to her, it was probably 6 months later, which is my fault. But we quickly made up, and she said, what can we do to get you back, you know, in business? So we had a meeting, and that went extremely well. They basically met my so-called demands, which were I literally can't do or don't have the time to do any of the administration, the shipping and the packing and everything else that goes with customer service in general, drop-off pickups because I live in an apartment, yet I process, you know, currently at my father's place. Like once I move to a bigger place and I'm able to process everything myself in one location, that would be much more ideal. However, this is the setup I have, and it makes it very difficult to deal with the clientele. And they said, well, we'll take care of all of that for you, and all you have to do is process film. How's that? And I'm like, perfect. That's a great deal. So we work something out, and I'm basically 3-4 runs in now. And I am going back to work very soon. I start working in the film industry as what I do normally. First I'm starting on a pilot, and then I go into a show that I've been doing for the last 5 years, Suits. And, this is now season 6, and we'll run for like 6-7 months. So we'll see how it goes then. Processing may become a little more infrequent, but it will happen, and I plan to continue doing it because of the passion. And, Claudia is the one here who's resurfaced and put us together. So now, you know, I have a location, customers have a location to go to that's stable and consistent, and they'll hopefully get consistent and accurate processing from me every time I do it. But again, to just clarify her role, she is the general assistant manager at Downtown Camera, and she has an equal passion that I do, and she wants to make Downtown Camera the one place in Toronto anyway that offers all these services.
It sounds like she's quite the evangelist for film.
Yes, she is. In fact, she's ordering. I may or may not have mentioned this. I don't remember, but she is basically stocking E6 film, Fujifilm, as we're all familiar with, because they're really the last option standing for the most part. There are other options, but not the clear cut every format available. You know, here's a couple of emulsion choices that Fuji provides, and yeah, they're bringing everything in. They have 35. They're currently stocked 35 1/24 5, and they will special order 8x10. So that's fantastic news. And they're also working on getting some older, expired, you know, the filmphotographyproject.com.
Yeah, the retrochrome. They offer
up like what's it called again? Retrochrome. Retrochrome, which is essentially salvaged film stock from government surplus and Kodak surplus. And, you know, they're repackaging that. So at least that's a creative input to get your E6 fixed. But if you really want to test out E6 and test out my process, I recommend Fuji and Fresh Film, and then you get an idea of what benefits E6 can offer you as far as you know, how it looks,
like a good baseline.
Yeah, you get a baseline. Yeah.
How busy does it keep you?
Well, it is too early to tell, because I've only really started in, let's see, was it the end of January? End of January, early February. So I've had about 3 runs to date, and they've been coming in increments. So they've been about 15, 20 rolls at a time. And that usually takes me on a good day, like if I show up at 9, I could probably get about 20 to 30 rolls done in, let's say, a 12-hour day. I mean, it is a lot of work. And it's also because my machine is a low volume machine. It's not designed for high volume runs, but we're also at a point in this E6 world where you're really not going to get high volume machinery. You know, there's one lab I know of in Canada, Borealis, that still has their big, and I mean, forgetting the name of the machines, but one that could do 50 rolls in an hour, but we certainly don't have that kind of volume anymore.
Now, speaking as someone, like I've done E6 development myself, but just in a standard, you know, hand tank. Mm-hmm. Could you tell me more about the machine that you use and the process you use?
Well, I use a Jobo Autolab. I have two of them. I have a Jobo Autolab 1000 and a 1500. They're basically Jobo's smallest tabletop units. They're about the size of I don't even know what to look at here.
Like a suitcase? Basically,
I'd say, yeah, that's a good one. I'd say a medium-sized suitcase.
Okay.
So you would, and it's fully automated. So time, temperature, agitation, which are the 3 main variables for any process, are all controlled by the machine. And the only reason I offered out this service was because I can have consistency. And if it wasn't for consistency with E6, then I wouldn't offer it out. I'd just do it for myself. Because when you do it yourself without a machine, you're at those whims of especially temperature. You have to make sure your temperature stays at 100 degrees Fahrenheit or 75 degrees Celsius. Man, I just did a run yesterday and I don't even
yeah, I guess it like depends on the chemistry on the kit.
Yeah, and for the machine and the chemistry, the chemistry I use, which is the Tetanol 3 bath, which is all I can access at this point. I know there's a Fuji kit out there, full 6 bath, which is what I used originally. I used a Kodak 6 bath kit. And then I was definitely wanting to use the Fuji right after Kodak kicked the bucket on that. But, to get any of it here was cost prohibitive in a big way. So finally, when a supplier opened up for Tetanol, that's what I went with. And to be honest, I don't really see the difference, and I don't think anybody else would, even though there is this debate about 3 bath versus 6 bath and blah, 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 and the longevity and all this. Well, I can't officially test all of that anymore, but I can say in the years I've been using the Tetanol, I haven't seen a thing, and that's been maybe 7 years now. The machine basically controls all your variables to a very precise degree, and you can at least rule out, other than me, let's say, making an actual mistake of pouring the wrong chemistry in the bottle, or God forbid, even closing the lid on one of them, you're not going to have any problems. And I'm always using fresh chemistry every single time, so there will be no variable in the replenishment of, let's say, a lab, you know, because labs with the bigger machines, they'd use a replenished based system or a replenished based chemistry. And that was one of the main things that turned me off from getting my film done professionally, because I had so many problems every time I'd go in. It was like rolling the dice. It's like, what stage are we at with this chemistry? Is this, did you just pour a new batch in, or is this a replenishment that you should have maybe stopped replenishing 5 replenishments ago, for example? And so I would get film back that would rarely be clean. Once in a while, I'd go, oh, that's a nice clean. Oh, look at the D-Max and the brights and everything's great. But it came to a point where I had enough faux pas, even where a point where one lab, they're now closed. And I understand accidents happen. I totally get it. I mean, I can make an accident. I can make a mistake too. But at least chemistry ideally won't be one of them, you know? So that for me is a very high standard, because it's nothing worse than going, let's say you go to Alberta, you know, going to the mountains and you're trekking and hiking and you're with your large format camera, you're taking these wonderful pictures. You come back only to find that, well, they've used exhausted chemistry on my film. And it's a bummer. It's a big bummer. You're like, wow. So are you going to pay for my flight to go back there? And, you know, and I tented out there and I did all this stuff. And this was actually 10 years ago, 12 years ago. And I came back and it was, you know, half of the stuff was unusable. And they're like, oh, you could just scan it and you could fix it. This was when, you know, Photoshop and scanners and stuff were starting to, you know, really dig their heels into our industry. And I'm like, no, you can't.
That's not the
point.
You
can't fix that.
Yeah.
That's not the point. The point is instead of trying to save on overhead, you should have replenished that chemistry when it was time to properly replenishment, or run a proper test strip and go, okay, it's exhausted. Maybe we should change it now.
Take pride and offer quality.
Exactly. And another lab, even, again, accidents, this is what I was actually getting to. And I veered. I tend to veer, by the way, because thoughts enter into my brain and I go, oh, wait a second. Here's a thing I can talk about. But basically, you know, mistake of one lab turned on the lights on some of my 4 or 5s. So I lost 6 or 7 sheets, and you're just going, okay, well, never know what that image is going to be or what it could have been. Even though I do take judicious notes, but this was a while ago, so I don't even remember what the images I lost were. But the point is I lost images. So, you know, I said, no, I'll just do it myself. And then this way I have only my own ass to kick, you know, if I make a mistake.
Which is different, yeah.
It's different. It's totally different. And same with black and white. I mean, black and white especially, there's so much room to play and to experiment and to do all sorts of things. And you almost accept that. You go, yeah, okay, well, with this, you know, or you shoot in a certain way that you can go, okay, with these rolls, I want to try such and such, or with this, I want to do that. But with E6, it's different. E6 is such a precision type of film. It's a very technical film. And really, there's not a lot of leeway, as we all know. Latitude is very limited. And people say, you know, 5 to 7 stops. True. Sometimes I see a little more. Depends on the emulsion. It depends on where you nail it, you know, when you're shooting it. Because I do get impressed still. There's sometimes I see things where I go, wow, I never expected the chrome to see that, or to see the sun the way it did, or the shadow and the, you know, under the tree. But I tend to be a landscape photographer. Let's get that out of the way now. I do shoot other things. I'm starting to shoot much more city work as I get older, and, you know, seeing everything and just shooting everything whenever I can. But my passion is still landscape photography. And this is the reason why I have larger formats, but we'll get into the formats later. But basically, when you develop it, E6 is effectively, there's one way to do it.
The
and
right
if you
way.
Don't do it that way, then you're screwed. So I decided I don't want to have that variable anymore. And that's why I invested in the machine. because it's like, okay, now the machine is going to take care of all that, short of the machine breaking down or things happening. But Germans made it, and so far it's been amazing. So they've made a very good product. And I did have two of them. One was mainly for backup, and I have never needed it. Both machines are used. In fact, actually, I'm lying. One machine is used. The other machine is new, but I haven't even used it yet. I've mainly because I haven't had room. So, but when I do get the room, and I know if this starts getting a little busier, I'll have to employ both machines to develop everybody's work.
And how much chemistry does each machine use?
It goes by what you put in it. So, for example, a maximum run is 5 rolls of 35 millimeter or 6 rolls of 120, or obviously 220 is not really made anymore, but 3 rolls of 220, which is equivalent to 6 rolls of 120. So per run, there's two drum sizes. There's a large drum and a small drum. And it's much like black and white. You get yourself in a dark room, or in my case, I have a change tent, a Harrison change tent that I obviously own from being in the film business. And, get my hands in there and load them onto reels, just like you would black and white with the Patterson tanks. You'd use the plastic reels and feed your film through it. The ingenuity with the Jobo system is the reels are bigger. And with 120, because they expand and they shrink, they do 120, 127, and 35 millimeter. I believe very much like the Pattersons. I do have the Pattersons, I just haven't used them in a while. They can actually take 2 rolls of 120 on one core, which is very nice. So you wheel on the first roll, and you get it all the way to the end. And then there's a little red tab that you click in, like it stays out while you're loading the first one. Then you click it in, and then that prevents the second one from overlapping the first one. So it gets 2 rolls on there. And then this way you have 3 reels in the large drum, and you've got 6 120. Now, both of those take roughly the 35 millimeter, again, because I just did it. The 35 millimeter takes 600 milliliters of chemistry, and the 120 takes 675. And that's based on a full drum. So obviously, if you have less film in there, let's say you don't have enough film to finish, or the large drum is dry and everything else is still wet. I kind of air dry everything. This is my other part of the business I need to speed up. I got to get more drums and reels, or I got to get a bit of a drying system going on so I can turn around much quicker, because I do get myself to a point where I have to wait for things to dry, and or help it, clean it, whatever. And then, continue on. So it kind of slows you down in your day. But I'm working out systems and methods as we're going along, and it's actually been kind of fun. Like, in fact, I've been doing this for how long? What, 10 years, I guess, with my own work. And yesterday, I figured out a way to place my fingers in the dark when I'm loading the 35 millimeter, because it's so, it's wound so tightly that it's so curled. Every time you're winding it up, you got to stop yourself, stretch out the film, wind it up, stretch out the film, wind it. So you're doing it incrementally. But I figured out a way where I can put my thumb and my forefinger to keep a constant feed, just to lengthen the roll just a little bit in my hands so that I can constantly feed it without having to stop. And it makes no sense talking about it, but when you're doing it, it's a different thing. And that took 10 years to figure out. So there you go. Sometimes you see little things that you just go, oh, wow, okay, what if I tried this? but it's been a lot of fun. Part of it, too, is I know we'll get into this. I do like E6. I enjoy shooting it. Work, for example, for me, is it's all digital nowadays. We're using the Alexas and the mirrors and all the fancy, the red cameras and all these things that everybody's dying to use. And personally, I do not really care. I hate saying it that way. It's just no fun to me. And yes, I'm a technician. I'm paid to be there, and I'm paid to do my job and be professional and not make mistakes or really try to avoid them, because time is money. It's that whole argument in the entertainment world. And I consider myself good at the job, but it's a job for me. And everyone's like, oh, are you kidding? I'd love to be on a film set. It's like, yeah, you would. And then you'd get like every other union member at a point. Once you get on there and you get on these bigger shows, you just go, okay, that's enough. So this is what I do for fun. Ironically, I do my photography and on the side, because I wouldn't consider this a money-making venture. I'm doing this strictly out of passion. And the confusion with some of my earlier customers, they always thought I was They always thought I was a lab, and I'm like, no, I'm not a lab. I'm a photographer just like you, who just decided to do this. This is why your film can't be ready in an hour. This is why, you know, I've got to go drive all the way to my dad's place right now because I don't have space to store and manage all this equipment. You know, so I got to collect a bunch of film. I got to get myself over there, develop it all, bring it back, and then call people. This was in the before Downtown Camera, and get people to show up at random based on my hectic schedule to come and pick up your film and pay for it. And or, you know, when people mailed it in, I had even stuff all the way from Australia. I remember I had a guy from Australia. I had a guy from Newfoundland. I had a couple repeat customers, one large format guy out of Nova Scotia. Then there was somebody from somewhere in Europe. I can't remember now. And he sent me film a few times. And I'm going, Europe? I mean, you got labs over there. But I guess maybe the cool thing was is, you know, seeing this. And I tried to manage all this myself, and it became very difficult. So, and people don't know. You just take film and you throw it in a box. You label it and you send it to the – yeah, that sounds very easy. But when you're doing – a lot of roles and a lot of customers. It
takes time.
It adds so much time. It's insane the amount of time it added. And I was actually, to be honest, I was actually heartbroken when I had to put the announcement on my original site to say I can't do it. I can no longer do it. I have to figure out something else. I didn't know what it was at the time, but I said I have to figure something else out. I couldn't even have employees. What am I going to say? Well, first of all, paying an employee, the overhead on that, let alone will they do the job as nitpicky and consistent as I will? And then it's, even if I got them to only manage the administration, but where do you put these people? I have no physical space. I'm doing this out of my father's house. And that's where, you know, hey, Dad, some guy is just going to come by and, you know, hang out for all day and, you know, do some developing. You mind, you know, feeding them? Like, it's not going to fly. So people didn't understand. Some people did that knew me or that you know, were repeat customers that kind of understood how it worked. But some were like, they would call and they'd be like, okay, I'm coming right now. I'm at work. What do you mean you're at work? I don't work as a lab guy. I work in the movie business. and there are some people were like, I came to your door and you weren't there. Like, no, but I would, you know, I know websites, you try to make them as easy and friendly as possible. But there were still so many people that just didn't follow the basics. Like I outlined, call me before you, whatever. This is not a lab. This is not a storefront. This is not a, you know, but still people would show up at random and be like, you weren't home, and they'd be all upset. And it's like, well,
I work in IT. People don't read instructions.
Yeah. Like, and you can't say, well, did you read the website? Well, you can, but you just got to do it very amicably. Right. So that was the biggest struggles. And then now, thanks to Downtown Camera, I'm literally the guy in the background. Even today, I finished the order. I had 32 rolls. I did it all day yesterday. Stayed the night because we had a snowstorm, which was good because, hell, I helped my dad shovel. Plus, I get to see him. He's on his own now, and he's getting older. And so in a way, it's good to hang out. But at the same time, I tell him, don't distract me while I'm developing, because this is business, right? I put it all in a box and send it back via waybills. We do waybills. Downtown Camera issues them all, and they have their day courier, and they pick it up. And thankfully, my dad's retired, so he's home most of the time, and they just call, and they either when they have to do a drop-off or a pickup, and it's been great. I don't have to deal with. Not saying that I don't like dealing with customers. I just don't have the time to deal with customers.
Now, I have to ask one question, and it's probably not an issue now that you have downtown camera, you know, sort of vetting mm-hmm. the film and everything. Have you had to tell people, sorry, I don't do Kodachrome?
Yeah, once or twice I did, yes. And but, you know, I'm still open, like, I still have my email, my personal email is accessible via the website. People can, I've actually taken off my number off the new website. But I did, obviously, when it was my own business, I had my phone number on there, and people would call and ask questions and all this. And that's great. Now I'm getting a lot of that through email. And most people respond fine. You know, they have a question. They don't know a certain thing. And I tell them, I say, you know, you could do this, you could do that. Or I don't do Kodachrome because it's a different process. Oh, okay, I get it. Da, da, da. Or you can try these people, which I know there's, I think there's one place in the States that actually finally quit on Kodachrome.
Yeah, Dwayne's quit.
But that's it. But there's another place, Film Rescue International or something like that. They will actually at least develop it in black and white. Yeah.
I've done that myself. A messy, messy process.
I hear it is messy.
Because of the Remjet.
Exactly. And I've taken away to even turning away Remjet-based, like CineStill film. And there's a couple others, like, oh, people will re-spool Kodak or whatever, Vision stocks. And I've done it a few times for people. And the Remjet is a pain in the ass. So I said, no, I can't. It worried about, obviously, getting, you know, I clean my stuff thoroughly. Like, if you actually looked at my processing equipment, you wouldn't even know that I process. It'd be like, if it wasn't for the machine being used, partially used, because there is some, you know, original gunk on there, very little. But I wouldn't even call it gunk. It's just, you know, streaks. Let's call it streaks. But other than that, you wouldn't even know I process, because I keep everything absolutely clean. And every time it's almost a ritual. Every time I get done and I finish, I go through the whole cleaning steps, and I clean all my equipment, the drums, the reels. It looks like it's been untouched. So that's a good thing. Also with we did get way off topic when we were talking about chemistry volumes. But yes, it is based on how many rolls you have in the drums. And the nice thing about this system is, because the drums lie on their side, you use a lot less chemistry for the volume of film that you have.
It's a rotary kind of thing?
It's a rotary system. So the drum would, click in on its side, and all it needs is to, you know, fill in the lower third or lower quarter of the drum, and the film rolls around in it. And whereas Patterson, if you know, most people that would do it, let's say on a budget, you can, but you're certainly not going to get your volume out of your E6, because right now, for example, you know, for the average person, and I'm using it too, because that's all that's available, but obviously Tetanol, there's 1 liter and 5 liter kits available. I'll even tell you where. It's no secret. I don't keep secrets. View Photo is the only place I know of in Vancouver that stocks 5 liter and 1 liter E6 Tetanol plus 5 liter, 1 liter C41 Tetanol. I've used both. Obviously, right now I'm just strictly focusing on E6 with this alliance with Downtown Camera. But beforehand, when I was doing it on my own, I did everything black and white, color neg, and E6 slide. That was also a bit of my struggle, because I would obviously, you know, run E6 first, clean the machine, then run C41, clean the machine. There is a cleaning process, but it takes, you know, about half hour. And then do the black and white runs at the end. And the problem with the black and white was, as you know, every roll needs to be treated differently, pretty much. Now, I use D76 ID11, Ilford.
The Ilford equivalent.
Which is basically the general purpose all around basic developer that
it's
can
like
do
vanilla.
Virtually every single film. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And again, I wrote this on my website. Here I'm veering again, but we might as well talk about it.
Yeah.
I wrote it on my website, and I said, this is how I do it, and this is all you're going to get. Now, if you're a black and white, you know, person that understands this stuff, photographer, then you might want to do it yourself. I even wrote that. However, people don't read the site. So then when they get their film back, oh, it's a little grainy. oh, it doesn't look right. I kind of wish you used, can't you use like Microfin, or can't you use, you know, they come up with Rodinal or any other name of developer. And it's like, no, do you want to pay for it? Because it, that's the thing. It's about when you're doing it professionally for somebody, you also have to be cost effective as best you can. And black and white is so dirt cheap comparatively compared to color. And even nowadays, even though prices have gone way up from what I remember starting in black and white, you're better off doing it on your own if you know that you're going to get a certain look with that film. You know, well, why send it to me? Yeah.
Well, that's what I do, and because so they, I have, you know, different films and different developer combinations.
Exactly. And it, and that's an art form in itself. And I don't claim to even know the whole art form, because I don't. But I do black and white from time to time. I start experimenting here and there and play around. But for the customer in a machine, you're getting D76. That's what you're getting.
It's the safe choice.
And it's a safe choice. And, you know, I follow the instructions, even though every single pamphlet on every single film says, these will vary based on what you do, or that, you know, they always have their own, like Kodak and Ilford and Agfa, they all have their own warning saying this is just our general purpose guidelines, but do what you want. Yeah, but for me, for the customer, I follow the general rule of thumb that they've outlined in their tech publications. And again, all the film came back great, everything was fine, but you'd get those customers that would complain. It's like, okay, well, then I suggest you should do it yourself, because if you know that look is going to happen, then, you know, then it's worth doing it yourself. Now, I get it. Not everybody wants to develop their own film, and not everybody has the time and or patience. But you know, that's unfortunately how it is. So for now, with this new alliance, I've decided to strictly focus on E6, because that certainly is my passion. There really is only one way to do it. And again, just as a reiteration to the customers that have been listening this long, or I should say the listeners, I use fresh chemistry every single time. So every single run, you're guaranteed fresh chemistry. And I discard it. It's very expensive compared to replenishment. But at the same time, that's how I'd rather do it, because I don't want that variable.
Yeah, there's nothing more expensive than ruined film.
Exactly, and that's the variable I ran away from. So why am I going to offer that to the customer? And the same thing with the customer who don't believe it, they believe it or don't believe it, but I run my film with theirs. And that's my test strip. I don't have test strips. I don't buy test strips. I don't think I need test strips. I just run my film with their work. And because I'm using fresh chemistry, and I've gotten to a point where I can see now by smell and by looking what the chemistry looks like when it's fresh. And sometimes, you know, if I've had a leftover, I put everything in the fridge, I keep everything at a certain temperature, the whole bit. But sometimes some of the stuff runs away on me, or I'll forget that I had, you know, usually I mix when I'm doing it, I mix. But once in a while, I'll have a bit of leftover. I can't get back for a couple of days, and I got to go back and you know, this is not current with the downtown camera, but then I'm talking about, you know, historically, you know, I'll run back or do my own work, you know, for example, and you get some of it done, leave the rest in the fridge. But obviously, there's oxidization. There's all sorts of stuff happening chemically. So I come back to finish 3-4 days later, and it depends. Sometimes the chemistry's fine, and sometimes, not so fine. So it depends, because you don't even know that chemistry itself. Yeah, when you buy it, it's new in your mind, but how new is it? Now, when you crack it open, I've witnessed everything. Every single time I've cracked it open, it's been fine. But it's like a fine wine. Sometimes they age faster than others. So you just got to keep tabs on that. And when I see, for example, yesterday, I threw out half a liter, even yesterday, because I put some in the fridge, and it changed, the color developer changed color, and I know it does change color, but because I had such a low volume standing by for the next run, and I had the other bottle was already full, getting into all these logistics, when I started with the low volume in the bottle, it went really dark, like darker than I would have liked, and I just went, no, not using it, and I threw it out, discarded it, and then I just continued. So that's hopefully a plus note for people that are listening. You know, I'm very aware of the chemistry and the reactions and everything else, and I make sure that if I'm not sure, because I tend to shoot E6 obviously all the time, whenever I can. I mean, I always have a float of E6 film of my own sitting in the fridge waiting to be processed. And I always use my film, especially when I start. Anytime I start, my film goes in first. I do the run, check it, look at it upstairs, you know, hanging to dry, it's fine, clean, go. Now I can start the customer's work. And then throughout that, I will develop, you know, my roles here and there with the customer's roles.
So I have one more question about your process. We've talked about 35 and 127. Well, it's been a while since I've seen a roll of 127 slide film. Mm-hmm. And
I developed one, I'll tell you that.
And,
I did.
And 120. Do you handle sheet film of any kind?
Yes, I
like
do.
4x5?
4x5, 8x10, and even if they can get it 5x7. I don't put it on the site, but I do say somewhere, I believe in the new website, I can't remember now, but that just ask me if it's E6, I can do it.
Does the machine do it, or do you have to do it manually for sheet film?
So it's all machine process. Everything E6 is full machine. Even the 8x10, let's call it a hack. That's what the kids like to say nowadays.
Oh.
the machine itself can do 35mm to 4x5. 110 is technically not supported. However, I found out that Jobo did make 110 reels. And the 110 reels are not designed for this Jobo system, but it's based on the same core that they use for this system. So I bought up a bunch of those, and I just experimented with the proper chemistry volume that I need, because you need more volume because the film sits closer to the core. So obviously, you know, picture it lying on its side, you need more chemistry filling the bottom of the drum to get up into the film. So I figured out what that was. I wrote those notes down, and there you go. So now we have 110 solved. 8x10 took a while. Jobo, I wouldn't say Jobo. I don't know if you've heard of Cat Labs of JP. They're in the States. I believe they're in Michigan. And they're the Jobo supplier. Like they're the place you go to if you need all your parts, you need spare motors, you need seals or, you know, rollers, any sorts of things for the Jobo machines. And so I bought a lot of drums and reels from them to get the surplus that I needed. And they decided to make a hack for 8x10. So with 4x5, it's a sheet film. The reel, let's start again. The reel for 4x5 can hold 6 sheets of film, 3 on one side and 3 on the other, right? Now in the small drum, that's 6 sheets. In the large drum, that's 12 sheets. You can put 2 4x5 reels in. So now what they did was they chopped up 2 4x5 reels and made basically an 8x10 version. So, but it can only fit, because 8x10 is much bigger, 4 times the size. They can only make 3 sheets fit in the reel, which was great. Productivity, I'm like, that's fantastic. 3 sheets of film at a time, great. The trouble with that, I did get their product. I bought it. I spent too much money on it. And loading it was a nightmare. Loading 4 or 5 was very easy because they're smaller sheets and they're easy to feed, and they stay in place when you put them in place and all that in this particular reel. But with 8x10, because it's so large, they want to bow out all the time. So you have to hold them a certain way. Plus, you're in the dark, so you can't see a damn thing. So you're really trying to manage these giant sheets, and your hands are getting all over them. Now you're getting sweaty. You're scratching each, you know, the edges of the one sheet is touching the other sheet and creating these nice little scratch lines across it. This is exactly how I do it for the customer. I'm kidding. So again, experimenting. I'll experiment before I release something to the audience, right? So I ruined enough of my own 8x10 sheets. Again, willingly knowing this, I'm not shooting any serious work. And I said, you know what? Screw this thing. I can't use this. So 8x10 was off the table for a while. And then what I ended up finding was a very, very simple hack. You know, I don't even know what it's called. Is it? People who knit, and they knit in 3 dimensions. So you've got your, it's like, is it called crochet, where you have those little plastic mesh sheets that you can knit into and create like three-dimensional objects.
I think so, yeah.
It's for knitters. It's got a name to it, but anyway, it's a plastic mesh. Basically, looks like a little miniature fence, right? You cut it up to size to fit in the drum. So I put that in the large drum, and it fits in there. And then all you do is you take a single 8x10 sheet of film in the dark, and you throw it in the drum. Done. And it develops perfectly. The chemistry basically gets underneath because of the mesh. It gets underneath the sheet, and it bubbles around and develops everything evenly. The only disadvantage to that system, other than perfect development, is
one at a time.
One sheet at a time.
Yeah.
So I got to do one sheet at a time as opposed to three sheets at a time. But it saves the scratches. It saves so many things. I mean, even chemistry from not in the beginning, you know, the chemistry volumes they outlined weren't correct. So I was like, oh, that missed part of this sheet and it missed part of that sheet. So anyway, but now it's flawless in that sense. And I've done, again, we'll get to formats, but I do own an 8x10 camera, and I've shot virtually only E6 in the 8x10 camera, which people would think I'm nuts, but that's all I've shot in it. And all my shots have come out, other than user error, like, you know, wrong exposure or accidentally flashing the film while you're shooting, and, you know, all that. It was just me, but the rest of it, the development was always fine.
Well, I'm glad
now customers can develop 8x10.
I'm glad to hear that you do sheet film, because I do have a 4x5 camera. I actually did, I don't know if I was in your current batch or not, but I actually did take a couple of rolls of 120 down to Downtown
okay.
Camera last week to get done. I'm not sure how well it turned out, because they're like that. It's slightly outdated film, and they sat around for a while, so because I couldn't be bothered developing them.
You might, maybe you were in the, you know. That's hilarious, because I just looked at the list yesterday. I was going through the names. And no, actually this morning, because I was boxing everything up this morning. And I don't know if your name was in there now.
Yeah. It might be the next batch, whatever, because I took it and they said it takes a while. I said, if I've sat on the film for a year or like 8 months,
oh, I see.
I can't exactly expect 1 hour photo.
Right. Well, here's the thing. Let's talk about that, because I haven't gotten it recently, which is a good thing, and I'm sure Downtown Camera is fielding all those questions, because obviously when I was the first line of defense, I would get that a lot, and I'd say, what do you mean you can't develop in one day? And other than the normal explanation of I work and I have a life and the whole bit, it's a very time consuming process, and it's not just your roles. Like, people would come with literally one roll. It's like, can you do this now? No, I can't do this now.
You have to batch up, otherwise the chemistry becomes prohibitive.
It makes no sense. And this is why, again, I always have an overstock of my own film sitting in the fridge. I don't rush and get all my film processed. So for me, it's Christmas every time I develop now, because I get to see my work every so often. I go, oh, yeah, right, I remember that. And like, for example, I got a lot of 35 and 120, mostly 120 actually, from when I went and took a trip last August. I got about 40, 50 rolls. I'm probably Fuji's best customer for all I know, but non-professionally, by the way. But so I got a good, maybe I'm down to 25, 30 now sitting there. But what I'll do is I'll develop everybody's work, you know, put mine here and there to fill the drum and, or, you know, to make sure everything's a full run, right? Because sometimes, even when I got to push film, like, for example, I pushed some film yesterday, and thankfully I had two rolls from the customers that were pushable. But if it was only one customer that needed a push, then I had one of myself that could have been pushed. So I could have filled the small drum with, it takes 235 max, right? And then that would have been considered a full run, and you go. So what I'll do is when I near the end of the chemistry, like I had 500 mil left yesterday, left over, and that 500 mil was for myself. I finished off the run with my film. So this way the chemistry gets used complete. It never sits around, other than the time, like I was talking about, when I, you know, here and there I had to run away. And this was, again, mostly just when I was doing it for myself. But now it's, the chemistry gets cracked open. I mix what I need, and then I finish it. Whenever, usually I try to do this in a day or two, so I make sure it all gets finished, right? And I leave nothing to chance. So this way, the next time I show up and do the run again, crack open, use what I need, and then finish. And I'll use my film to finish everything up, because what's the point of throwing chemistry away, right? So once the customer film runs out for that run, then I use mine to close it up.
Okay, John here. What we've decided to do is split the interview with David into two parts and publish this month's episode a week early, and publish part two of this episode 1 week from today, next Thursday evening. Because it was a long conversation with David, fascinating. I don't want to cut a single bit out because he's a fascinating guy to talk to, but the episode was getting a little long, so we are going to split it into two. Now, there is one side effect. We did not know ahead of time that we were going to release this episode a week early. So when we talk about the gas meetup on May the 7th in Hamilton, we'll be saying things like, see you next week. So have no fear, the date has not changed. It is still May 7th. That's right, on May the 7th, Classic Camera Revival Podcast is having our gas meetup in Hamilton, Ontario. Alex, Donna, Mike, and yours truly will be there. We'll be meeting at 10 a.m. at Ferguson Station Park, King Street East and Ferguson Street South. Plenty of cheap parking is available through the downtown. We'll be meeting up, going on various photo walks. Also, Doors Open is happening the same day in Hamilton, so there will be lots of photography to take advantage of. So, we really hope to see you there. And now, back to the gang.
You see, John, this is why we send you to do the interviews instead of me. You just nail it every single time. So, thank you, John, and thank you, David, for sitting down and having a chance to talking with us. We are just over a week and a day away from our big meetup in Hamilton. We have a couple of great photo walks planned for the city. We have the James Street crawl, and plus just a chance to go and explore a city that has really gotten a bad rap, but actually the downtown is quite beautiful. It's one of my favorite cities to photograph in.
We're looking forward to seeing a lot of you listeners out there. Would be great to have a lot of people come out and join us.
Yes, absolutely.
Let's go take over Hamilton for a day.
And we promise not to ask you if you can still get film for your camera.
Yeah, that's it for us. And as they say, April showers makes me want to get out there and shoot Tri-X. So I'm Alex Laux.
This is John Meadows saying we definitely hope to see you in Hamilton. Be there or be digital.
Oh, that's interesting. Be there, be digital. This is Mike Bataxi signing off, and just want to say, let's keep it instant.
This is Donna Bataxi. I look forward to seeing all you guys. Please come out and have a good day. Keep that film rolling.